You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, Ben Eagle. To listen to previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes by searching for Meet the Farmers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 21 of Meet the Farmers. We're in Scotland again for the final episode of my first podcast road trip, and in this programme I was at the Royal Highland Show just outside of Edinburgh. Before we start, I'd like to say that I'd love to have your nominations for Farmers to Profile, so if you do know of somebody who you think would be interested or would like to put yourself forward to be featured on the podcast, visit thinkingcountry.com and you can find my contact details there. So let's head back to June and up to Edinburgh. Hello and welcome to the final day of the road trip and the Royal Highland Show. The sun is shining and thousands have flocked to the showground this morning for what is the premier event in the Scottish agricultural calendar in terms of events. It's my first time at the show and I'm very excited and looking forward to meeting people and speaking to people in what is a very relaxed atmosphere. I'm here with Kelvin Pate, a sheep and beef farmer from just outside Gifford in East Lothian,
who's also NFU Scotland's Lothian and Borders Regional Chair. Kelvin was involved with the union for several years before taking the regional chairmanship, being the East Lothian branch chairman and also representing his region on the livestock, legal and technical committees, including chairing the National Livestock Committee from 2007 to 2009. Kelvin, thank you for speaking with me today. First of all, this morning you've been in the NFU building talking to people. It's only the first day at the show, but what are the sorts of things that are coming to the fore in terms of what are people talking about?
I think this spring, on the livestock side, the further west you go, the harder it's been. It's been wet in the west and there's been snow in the east. So it's been a difficult spring, and it's quite nice that the sun's been out the last 3 or 4 weeks and things have warmed up. I don't like to mention the word Brexit, but you know, that's in the back of people's mind. I was listening to Fergus Ewing talking this morning. The Scottish Government is trying to put in place a plan to how we take food production forward, and I don't think they have all the answers, but they want to talk to the people in the industry, which is a farming industry, about how we make that happen. And I think you have to kind of commend them for doing that, because if you want to find out how things work, ask the people that are doing it.
Let's deal with the Brexit issue early on. The matter of devolved power and agriculture in a post-Brexit scenario, how clear is that? And how clear do Scottish farmers feel it is currently?
My own personal view is that at the moment, agriculture is a devolved thing to the Scottish Government. Scotland is a different topography from south of the border, in that Scotland is 80-odd% LFA ground.
That's less favoured area for people who don't know.
Down south. So we've got a big livestock industry, but we also have arable and fruit and veg sectors as well, which we don't want to forget about. But it's how you get a system that delivers for active farmers that take the risk to produce food, which can then be bought by the public.
You're from East Lothian, and you're representing the East Lothian and Borders region, which itself is very diverse. I don't know it very well, but can you just paint a picture for listeners of what South East Scotland looks like?
Well, in East Lothian and round about the Kelso area and down the east coast, you've got an arable belt, and then you've got the foothills of Lammermoor Hills, and then down into the borders, you've got a lot of mixed farms, cattle, sheep, and a fair bit of arable. So it's quite diverse in that if you go from East Lothian to the top of the Lammermoor Hills, you effectively have all of Scotland within 20 miles, and that at the coast you have vegetable production. Halfway up you've got grain and tatties, and then you've got heather on the hills and black-faced yows.
Did you always want to be a farmer?
When I was at school, I was very into computers. For those of you who are of my age, you'll know what ZX Spectrum is. I used to spend hours learning how to program it. I think I've still got it, actually, and I wrote programs for it because I enjoyed doing it. And I think if I had my life again and I'd gone down that route, I would be a computer programmer.
That's interesting.
I would probably be about 18 stone instead of 14 stone. Probably have heart troubles because I'd be doing no active work and sitting in front of a screen all day, and I probably couldn't see because I'd use my eyes so much. As you get older in life, you realise that health's the most important thing. And if I had my time again, I still think I would end up being a farmer, but I think variation's the spice of life.
When and why did you, and this is you speaking personally here, did you get involved in NFU Scotland and agricultural politics as well?
I've stood politically as well as for NFU. I think one of the things I get a kick out in life is taking somebody's point of view and putting it forward in a way that actually, because it makes sense, to try and make it happen. There are people in life who are good with ideas. There are good people in life who are good at getting their ideas actually taken forward. And it's sometimes marrying the two together. It seems stupid, but it's good to try and influence the right thing to happen in life.
So you've got your nose to the ground when it comes to the farming community around here. What are the main issues that people are talking about now within the Scottish farming community, other than Brexit?
I think it's maximising what we produce. You know, the best way to make farming flourish is to make it profitable, and be it government help or be it individual companies help, the food chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Now, it's not just farmers that sometimes get bad deals. There's guys in the middle of the food chain that are getting squeezed, but it's important that all the food chain is able to flourish, because if you lose any link in that chain, the whole thing breaks down. Going forward, we need to look at other markets in the world, not just the ones we have or the ones we might lose, but new ones, and find ways to process what we produce as raw ingredients into things that people want to buy. In Scotland, we export out of Scotland quite a lot of raw, be it lamb especially, and to maybe a lesser extent beef, down south for it to be processed. I would like to see that processed in Scotland and sold with a Scottish flag on it. Whether that gets sold in its traditional markets or elsewhere, I think it's a good selling point. We're a very green country. You know, the world is going to need more food. Water seems to be an issue for a lot of the world. It's not an issue up here. We get plenty of rain most of the year. We do get dry spells, but eventually it does rain. We had 30 mils two nights ago, which kind of brought the water deficit back into balance a little bit. But you know, there are other parts of the world where they can get no rain for years on end, and their production can go from 100% to zero in a very short spate of time. And looking at food security, I think people need to realise that if we become too dependent on food imports, you may find that sometimes it's not there. Back in at Christmas time this year, the price of lamb in New Zealand was higher than it is here. Now, that's a first. And I think that is something that people need to realise, that although there is other places in the world that produce food, it won't necessarily be any cheaper than we're producing here, and it makes more sense to produce it here and keep local jobs and local infrastructure than importing it.
Of course, 20 years ago, the region was facing a very different set of challenges to what it is today, with, of course, foot and mouth is at the centre. Take me back to that time.
In 2001, there was a foot and mouth outbreak. I think the nearest it got to us was Duns. I still remember, actually, the guy in the snowplough saying, "Do you want me to open the road?" And I said, "Not really." He said, "That's fine, we'll leave it blocked so nobody could go up it." That seems an awful long time ago. But back then, you know, the things that's changed a lot is the cost of things. You know, nitrogen was 80 quid a tonne. It's now probably 280. The price of beef has gone up. The price of lamb has gone up to a lesser extent. But one of the biggest issues we have is the profitable part of farming. And a lot of costs have been pushed up, but what we produce hasn't gone up by the same margin. Farms are getting bigger and bigger. We're looking at, you know, arable farms in East Lothian. There's a lot of contract farming going on now, whereas back then there were still a lot of family farms. And if you look at the next generation and how they're going to get a start in farming, these 300-acre farms, a bit like Moan, they're getting scarcer and scarcer. How these young people get a start is going to be very difficult. You've got legislation and land reform, which, to be quite honest, has scared any landowner from renting their farm out, not because of what's there in the legislation, but the potential to the right to buy. It's technically not there, but it technically is, because if a lawyer tells you not to do it, you're not going to do it. And that's the problem that the tenanted sector is having. And as a result, most farms are now going down the contract farming type of thing.
Mainly for the benefit of listeners south of the border, and who knows, north of the border maybe as well, can you just run through the Land Reform Act and what impact that's actually had, what it actually means in layman's terms?
Land reform, broadly speaking, was to give more security to people that rented land. There would be 2000, off the top of my head, 2003, 2004, there was legislation came in. And at that time, there were a lot of farms and partnership tenancies that got a letter from usually their lawyer of the land owner to say that they dissolved the partnership, which effectively broke up the tenancy. Now, that wasn't the intention of the Land Reform Bill, but lawyers are there to look after the interests of their clients, and under that legislation there was a potential that farmers that had a tenants agreement would get the right to buy. As that turned out, it hasn't come to fruition.
Are you optimistic for the future of Scottish farming?
Yes, I think what we do may have to change. What we'll be farming in 5 years' time will be fairly much similar. But what I'd like to see is a farming industry that can actually survive in producing food. There's so much push about diversifying into X, Y, and Z to subsidise the farm, effectively, is what they're trying to tell you. Well, if you diversify, why would you want to farm? And, you know, there are farmers out there that all they want to do is, as they would say, farm. And these guys are the guys that need support so that what they produce has a market. Because without them, the countryside as we know it will change.
Driving around the borders yesterday, talking to people, one of the debates that have got people quite hot up is the forestry versus farming question. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of new trees certainly being planted on the borders and elsewhere in Scotland. But do you see that pushing further in favour of forestry?
I think there's two kind of arguments for forestry. When the land's tenanted and it makes a tenanted farm unviable because of the loss of land, I think that's something that may need to be looked at. When you've got somebody who owns land and they're selling it for forestry and there's no third party involved, I think that's a business decision for farmers to make. When you go down Langham Way, I believe you can go 40 miles now and it's all trees. From my own perspective, we bought our farm in 1983, I think it was, and there were high interest rates. We sold the hill off a year or two later. That went into forestry. Now, that's a 400-acre block, 350 acres it was planted in trees. That land carried roughly 400 blackface ewes, lambing just over 100%. There was a forester up there looking at that timber last year, and he would reckon there would be somewhere in the order of 1,200 lorry loads of timber to come out of that forest. What would be an interesting calculation for somebody else to do would be, what's the relative values by the time that's replanted again, the value of the timber compared with the value of the sheep that came off it. But the other thing to remember is, maybe not so relevant in the East Lothian area, but if you look at somewhere more remote, there's nobody on the land in between time. So if you plant a big area in a more remote area and you take people's jobs away because they look after, say, the sheep, you then could end up with basically not as many people and the supporting businesses that rely on agriculture to make their living.
That was certainly an interesting chat with Kelvin. Afterwards, I wandered the showground and spoke to several reps of organisations, but I'm going to profile just two here, one being Scotland's Rural College and the other being a friend of the podcast, the Nature Friendly Farming Network. First up is Jamie Newbold from the Rural College and then Michael Clark representing the NFFN.
I'm with Jamie Newbold in the Scotland's Rural College tent, who are here at the Highland Show today. Jamie is the academic director of the college. Jamie, thank you for speaking to me. Perhaps can you give me a flavour of what the college offers today in terms of meeting the needs of the skills of Scotland's rural sector?
So SIUC prides itself on being a three-legged stool. So we are trying to integrate research, so cutting-edge research, with consultancy, actual on-farm advice, with education. So trying to bring together education, skills, teaching, research, consultancy, trying to offer a whole package of support for an industry that is going through remarkable change. Brexit, climate change, lack of labour, mechanicalisation. These are big, big changes that our sector is going through. And then you've got the scientific changes, gene editing, gene processing. Things are going to be changing very rapidly in the rural sector, and we need to be there providing the skills and the training.
So as a training facility, and as a training facilitator,
yeah.
How do you keep on top of that changing need at a time when everything is changing so rapidly?
I think that's one of the real importances of SIUC, in that our research service is rated the best in the UK. We came out at the top of agricultural research. Having that agricultural research rooted in skills training means that we can transfer cutting-edge advices onto the kids that are doing HNDs, doing national certificates, working on farms. Similarly, our consultancy, we've got 12,000 farmer customers. That's about 60% of the active farmers in Scotland work with SIUC. We are on farms every day, so we have that rooted in. Bringing these cutting-edge research rooted with farm practice and the education together is a real advantage.
And on a grassroots basis, your students can really benefit from that.
We hope to. I mean, you know, we can always improve. Everybody can, and that's largely what I'm engaged in trying to do. But yeah, I think that's a real advantage to the kids that come to study with us.
What sorts of backgrounds are your current students coming from?
This is a challenge. The rural industries tend to attract people from rural backgrounds. And to be honest, that's fine, it's good.
Yes.
But we also need to grow this. We need to bring more kids from urban backgrounds in. You know, we've got to get beyond the muck and magic. You know, I've got a bunch of school kids joined me today from East Lothian. And the questions you get, do we need to bring wellies? Will it be dirty? No, it's a showground. And not all agriculture, not all rural life is muck and magic. There are some really challenging technical jobs in the industry. And I think we've got to open that up into the schools. And I think we, you know, this is our fault. We've got to take responsibility. We've got to start working with kids in urban schools, just introducing them to the whole idea of food production, the whole idea of environmental stewardship, the idea of working on the land. There are some excellent jobs in this industry. And we've got to make it obvious to the kids that are there.
Do you think careers advisors are well placed and well versed enough in the sector, in the changing nature of the sector, to be able to give that advice sufficiently?
I think we've got to. Well, I was talking to a couple of school teachers there, lovely people, and they've been on the showground an hour.
Yeah.
And they're coming, I didn't know there were so many different kinds of jobs.
Yeah.
And why would you?
Exactly.
Why would you? You know, that's, I'm not no way critical to people. We, as an industry, we've got to be more outward looking. I don't know if you've read the Agricultural Champions report that's just come through. That's one of the big points, is the need to take responsibility for our own future. Get out there, start talking about it, start talking to the schools about the opportunities. I think that's absolutely correct.
Michael Clark, Scotland Chair of the Nature Friendly Farming Network.
Thank you, Michael. So, the environmental challenge that Scotland faces, farmers on the ground, there is work being carried out through formal schemes and otherwise, but can you summarise the big challenges that are faced across the country?
Well, Scotland's very different from south of the border and other parts of the UK. A large part of Scotland is upland, less favoured area. Difficult to farm, high nature value, but very challenging to make ends meet, particularly in these areas. So what we can't have, when we do eventually decide what we are going to have after the transition period to succeed the CAP, what we can't have is a one-size-fits-all. So it's a realisation in the farming community, the government, and I think probably in the public, that we do need bespoke solutions for regions of Scotland and sector solutions. We believe in the network that there is a solution which can make room for and put at the heart of the future support policy, nature-friendly farming.
The Nature Friendly Farming Network, the network itself, was launched earlier this year. It's very new. How's it going down in Scotland?
Well, it's quite new here, so we've slightly bided our time, because you're talking to me at the Highland Show, which is the showcase for Scottish agriculture. Everybody comes here, it's their holiday. We get the public. You don't get many better places for the public and the farmers to meet. So we've bided our time. It's going well. I think we're taking our time because we realise that there's a devolution settlement in Scotland. Nobody's quite sure which powers are coming back from Brussels to Holyrood and which are going to Westminster, how long they're going to be there. So we think it's important to feel our way here. So we haven't rushed ahead. We haven't had the same kind of health and harmony statement that you've had south of the border. We had a consultation paper last night which makes encouraging noises about the importance of the environment as part of the rural economy. We've had the Agricultural Champions Report, which we can identify with a lot of, and we have a National Council of Rural Advisors who are producing a consultation. So it's all still to play for in Scotland, and we are putting our best foot forward, setting out our stall so that we can try and appeal to farmers and to the public from whom we need support if we're going to continue to get public subsidy.
Do you see public payments for public goods, that type of model, working in Scotland, or would it be something slightly different or very different?
We've got 5 years now of security and stability, which is essential in keeping the current system, where most of the support goes to, guess what you would call, food production, and only a smaller element goes to nature-friendly farming. We'll be lobbying for that to shift. We think we need a radical uplift in the effort and the support that goes to nature-friendly farming, to the environment, because we think it's part of the sustainable solution for a more profitable farmer. Our vision for Scottish farming is four things. One, farming that's profitable. Two, that is increasingly driven by market orientation. We've got to be more market orientated. And we see our markets as not just the marketplace traditionally where you get, you know, the money for your goods, but the public sector as an alternative option. So you get money in return for delivering public benefits, you get public support. Big emphasis on improved resource efficiency, got to be much more efficient. Farming needs to see itself as part of the food and drink sector, you know, a holistic approach, and world leaders in green farming. And that's where we think our bit can contribute.
What do you hope the network to achieve in Scotland over the next 12 months?
I would love to obviously have more members, to have a diversity of ages and farming types on the steering group, which we're still filling. And I would like to have got the message clearly out there about how we see the way forward and how it can feed into the government's view of the way forward, and we can start lobbying and get seats at tables where we, you know, currently, being a new organisation, we don't have.
That's almost it for today. Please do continue to spread the word and share this episode on social media. You can find me at Benji_Eagle on Twitter and Instagram. Now, unless you don't drink, you can't visit the Highland Show without having a beer or two. And I know there are probably ethical issues with recording and alcohol, but I went and did it anyway and had a few pints at the same time. But what is the best thing about the Highland Show? I'll leave you with this. See you next time, folks.
Alcohol. So the best thing about the Highland Show is...
alcoholic beverages. The burgers with onions.
Very good. And?
The banging social life you get.
The sun.
Good
the
sun.
The sun for your night.
See everyone that you don't see all the time.
Yeah. It's obviously the booze.
Apart from that, anything else?
Yeah. The stock's pretty good and all. The ladies and all.
The best thing about the Highland Show is...
the show jumping.
The best thing about the Highland Show is...
the music!
best thing about the Highland Show is...
The atmosphere.
Atmosphere.
The free stuff.
Face of enthusiasm. The best thing about the Highland Show is...
The atmosphere.